I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music by David Ornette Cherry. Here is music at davidornettecherry.com. Today I'm continuing to look at anti-racism in the arts. I'm excited to welcome someone who has created a buzz in Portland theater, both with two productions he directed last fall and winter at Portland Center Stage. And he was also associate producer at PCS at the time. And in July, he was named PCS's associate artistic director. Joining me via Zoom, I welcome Chip Miller to Stage and Studio. It's so great to finally meet you, Chip.
It's so great to finally meet you as well.
When did you officially arrive in Portland, I guess, and started working here?
I arrived late March 2019. And started work on April 1st, 2019. So it was I think I got here on a Thursday and my first day of work was Monday. So it was a very quick turnaround, but I was excited to be here and excited to get to work here.
You've been here longer than I thought you were. So, you know, where was I guess, you know? No, but, you know, it's great. So what was your initial impression? I always ask this of BIPOC artists who come here. What's your initial impression of Portland in general?
I mean, the thing that has been the first thing that was really overwhelming about getting to Portland is just the proximity to nature. That was just not a experience that I had. I mean, like living in Kansas City and New York, there's nature near you. You can go and find it if you work at it, but you don't really have to work at it to find yourself looking up and seeing a mountain range here. And so that was the first thing that really struck me. And then I think I've been really excited by the fact that Portland seems to be such an artist city. And the way in which art is consumed, treated, respected, that you don't have to argue for the value of art here, which is something that's not true in a lot of other places. And so that was really exciting. At the same time, and I think this is something that happens in every city, there's like, who is the tastemaker and who is saying that this is the taste that you follow? And so I think that's just, I don't think that's a unique to Portland thing. I think that is what we grapple against in the history of art, all like the way in which usually those with influence are those with money, and where money concentrates means a different thing at different points in time. And I think we could very easily craft a narrative, particularly around theater and where money has concentrated in the theater and how that has affected the way in which and who gets to go and see theater. But I think when I arrived in Portland, there were already so many conversations that I felt lucky to be able to be a fly on the wall for, of people talking about that. It wasn't as if this was like something that no one talked about, as if the way that Portland as a city that is predominantly white, I think that was not something that people are like, no, we can't talk about it, but rather, oh no, that's just the fact of it. I think something that I was very conscious of before I moved here was a lot of people, the response when like I'm moving to Portland, Oregon, oh, well, you know, it's an all white city. And so I got a lot of that. And at the time it struck me as like a very weird thing to say to someone when they say that they're going to move. And this was something that said by people of all races. Like it was just the standard response when I said I was moving to Portland, Oregon was, you're moving to an all white city. And the thing is, that's not true. And, it's a majority white city, but it's not an all white city. And I think that is a part of it, because there's a perception of what Portland is, and that is not tied to the history of the state.
Yeah, I think those are all great impressions. And I think you covered a lot of issues just in that one response. The arts are very much looked at favorably within Portland proper, right? But it's not necessarily accessible outside of Portland proper. And unfortunately, a good majority of BIPOC people live outside of Portland proper because of the, you know, rent values and house values and being pushed out through gentrification. So you've got a lot of different, you know, issues to grapple with here. And you just put that all out there, and I really appreciate it. So those are things that, yeah, definitely people are really interested in talking about. It's whether or not action has taken place, you know, after the talking. So I love that you have those impressions right off the bat, and you've been thinking about that. I've also heard, you know, through the grapevine that you actually go to people's events and, you know, that you have been supporting BIPOC theater and going and just, you know, getting to know our community, essentially. And I really, people have been impressed by that, Chip. I have to say that.
Well, I'm glad people are impressed, but for me, it's more selfish than anything. I feel very lucky that I get to do a job where part of it is going to see other people's art and helping people make art. That fundamentally is why I do what I do. It's a really cool job. And so there's so much art being made in Portland, not just theater, but dance, music, visual art, all of these different mediums that are in this space where there's so much creativity and there's so much blossoming and there's so much investigation of what work can be and the idea of possibility. And so, I don't know, I think that as an artist making work in a community, you have to understand what work is being made in your community of, like, getting to go see like some of the PDX ballroom stuff and knowing like, oh, how can that inform my work? Because it's happening here. Here's what other queer BIPOC artists are making. And so like, how can I be in conversation with that? In addition to what are people at other theaters doing? Like, I have to, for myself and my own art, be engaged with what other people are doing because I want to be part of that conversation. I want to be inside of it rather than I made this and then 5 years later be told, oh, someone else was making something that was in conversation with your work 5 years ago that you didn't know three blocks away from you. And it's the best way to find your future collaborators, that I can see someone in an audition and you can be great in an audition. But if I get to see you in a play, that's the difference of 5 minutes trying to get one particular part or one particular role versus, oh no, here's just a show where you already got the job and you've gotten to spend time with collaborators building something that is full and complete in a way that you can only learn by seeing someone's work.
I think that, yes, it's inspirational, but what you've just described is also community building. And it's, you know, and that's so important to inclusion. So I really applaud that. You directed two really well-received productions, Redwood and Hedwig and The Angry Inch, at Portland Center Stage. And actually, Hedwig is going to be returning once theater returns, right? So that's exciting that people that, like me, it was like sold out immediately. It seemed like you who didn't get to see it will now get a chance to see it. So that's exciting. I was just curious, though, going way back, do you remember your first theater experience?
Yes. My mother corrected me because I told this story recently and she's like, that's the wrong space. And I can't remember what theater it was at. I said it was Madison Square Garden and she told me I was wrong. But it was Christmas Carol with Ben Vereen as the ghost of Christmas present. And so I was probably like 4 or 5 years old. And I had been a very theatrical kid who I like the Disney boom was happening in my like young childhood. So movies like Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin were teaching me to love musicals. But that Christmas Carol and seeing Ben Vereen dance was it changed a lot of things for me. And I think that seeing the joy contained in his body of, I think I've spent since then trying to dance like Ben Vereen at all times. And if anyone's ever seen me dance, that's what I'm attempting to do. There's something about him that just struck me. So there was recognition in what he was doing. And I think I've been chasing that feeling since then.
Yeah, Ben Vereen, I love him. I wish I could have seen him. I always wished I could have seen him in Pippin, you know?
There's the 1985 video recording of that production. It's the Fosse production, but I think it's filmed in Canada and Chita Rivera's in it. But just to see him do like Glory. T- to see like how agile he is and how articulate he is in every single joint, like down to like the way the flick of the toe and the bend of the knee. I could talk about Fosse dancers that have been brewing for hours. So
I love Fosse myself. Jazz hands. So is that when you thought, you know, you caught the theater bug, like you thought you'd be working in theater? Do you remember when that was?
I think like I started doing theater at a very young age. I don't know when I thought, oh, this is a life that I could have. This is a career that I could have. It was just something I knew I was deeply passionate about, and that there hasn't really been a moment since I was 4 or 5 in my life that there wasn't some theatrical thing going on. It always was a place that I felt at home. It was always a place that I felt like I could express the things I was unable to express in other places. And I think it also is a place of community. I think the smallest play I've ever done, there were like 7 people working on it. And so that no matter what, to make a play, you have to work with other people. And that's always so exciting to me.
In case you just joined us, it's a reminder that it's membership drive time. KBOO is looking to increase its membership, and all dollars will also be matched by beloved art supporter Ronnie S. LaCroute at the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund, matching donations through the Oregon Community Foundation until September 20th, dollar for dollar. So go now to kboo.fm/give, or you can mail a contribution to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. And thank you, Ronnie. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio, talking with Chip Miller, Associate Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. And they currently have some virtual events and workshops online, which we're going to talk about soon. And you can see all that at pcs.org. I also have that link at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, where you can also hear a podcast of this show. So you worked with Marissa Wolf back in the day when you were both at Kansas City Repertory. So how does that compare? I mean, it's so great that you've continued this partnership.
I could write a book and go on for the rest of this interview about how much I adore Marissa. I remember when Marissa was interviewing for her job at KC Rep, and I was driving her around through the city. And as we were driving, we had this conversation that she said some things about, like, she was further along in her career than I was. I was a young aspiring director and artistic director. And just some of the things she said to me in that conversation still resonate for me. And there is a recognition there. I think the difference is in Kansas City, we were part of a much larger team. We were parts of the artistic team. But here with Marissa in the lead, it's the difference of helping someone else forward their plan, even if you are in love with that plan, versus getting to like make the plan. And so being able to sit with Marissa for years and to talk about like, what is theater? Our desks were next to each other in Kansas City. And so we would just have these conversations about like, how do you make a play? How do you build a culture? We co-directed a play together. And so Marissa is just my favorite person to talk to about plays. I love to think about the way she's seeing the world. I love to hear the way she articulates things. And I am so in love with her vision of what theater can do for a community. And so to be able to come here and help make that a part of this community and to become a part of this community feels like a gift.
Yeah, under her leadership, it seems like PCS is headed for a better, more inclusive future as far as hiring local actors and creative teams, because in the past it hasn't really been that way. And I've often had conversations with artistic directors that thought it was actually more cost effective to hire actors from out of town and house them than, like, you know, put the dollars into, you know, giving experience here and training people here, especially BIPOC actors and creative teams. So I'm just so glad that it seems like, I mean, is that the future? Can we expect more of that?
I would like to think so. I can't speak to what PCS was like before me, though I've heard stories, and I am just very interested in being a part of this community, and that there is a gift that we have found that as you diversify the rooms of people that are making the art gets richer. A diversity of perspectives enriches everything that you're making. And I just think the value of hiring local actors is incredible because it's community building. It's so much fun to make plays with your friends and to make plays with people who will become your friends and to make plays with people who you can run into at the grocery store, as well as to bring out of town actors when appropriate. I don't think that we would be doing our job if we were only hiring local actors. I think that we should be feeding the local economy, but also part of enriching an economy is bringing people from the outside to do work here. So it's finding that perfect balance, which is malleable. It's in one season, it might be, oh, we really tip the scale towards a lot of local actors. And one season, it might be, here are a few really cool projects, and we have to go out of town to, or they've come from artists out of town. So I think that there's no one hard and fast rule, but I do think there is a way of reinvestigating what the pool looks like. Because I think that what happens is as we work more and more, we tend to develop shorthands with people. And so when you develop that shorthand, it becomes easier and the pool shrinks a little bit. And so just trying to keep that lens wide and to know that there are always more opportunities to be made. How can we make more opportunities for people to work with us? How can we create more touchstones? And ultimately, knowing that it is a long-form relationship with this community, and who makes up this community is a vast, vast group of people, and that the job being the responsibility of having a job like this is to say who is underserved, who is not being seen, as well as who is being seen, because there's a value in knowing that all of these people are part of the economy of this community, and that to make sure that everyone is successful is to see everyone, and to create opportunities for everyone and try to make sure that we're making space.
I actually want to follow up on that, but before I do, I also wanted to do a shout out for Marissa and PCS for opening its doors to protesters, the lobbies anyway, for people to take, bathroom breaks and that kind of thing during the protests. And so I think that's also has been community building too, to show that support. And I do know that personally, Marissa has reached out to BIPOC, local theaters and said, what, or and artists, to say, what can we do to support you in our community? So all of that is good. All of that is community building. Part of that too is the audience. So when theaters are back, right? When shows are back, when events can happen indoors, I'm wondering, traditionally, the audiences have been predominantly white in predominantly white theaters and mainstream theaters. And there's a certain sadness when you're a BIPOC actor and you look out to the audience and it's 95% white. And I've encouraged theaters to do like BIPOC, discounts or nights, and those have been successful in my experience. But I'm just wondering if that is something that PCS would consider, because it's like you've got to build the audience by giving them the experience, right? And sometimes the experience is uncomfortable if you don't see people like you in the audience.
I don't disagree. And I know that it is not just a PCS thing, but I think it is an industry-wide conversation about how do we diversify our audiences. I think that, and that is speaking from the perspective of a predominantly white industry or predominantly white institution in what is purported to be a predominantly white industry. And so there is this framing of like non-white audiences don't exist, or they only exist when you're doing work focused on like generally like, oh, we're doing race-based work. So, which is a deeply complicated idea. And I think that we are living in a moment where our industry, thanks to the unfortunate but necessary racial reckoning that is happening throughout a lot of industries right now, unfortunate only because of what had to happen for us to get here, we are beginning to have conversations about what barriers have existed to keep theaters from diversifying their audiences in ways that feel significant, even though there has been a call to do this. And so I am hopeful that we are going to begin seeing across our field a different engagement, because I think that we have long thought that the only barrier to getting people of color into the theater is cost. And that is not actually what it is. I think it is rooted in an idea of, is this space for me? And I think that quite a many historically white institutions have sent the signal that this is not a space for you. Even if you are, we're doing a play that feels like it speaks to you, it's only now that this space is for you and you're a guest in this space. This isn't your home. And so I think what PCS is committed to doing is making sure that all people who come through our building, whether they be employees, artists, patrons, board members, audience members, anyone who touches what PCS is doing feels welcome and feels like PCS can be their home. And I think that's the work that a lot of not-for-profit arts institutions want to be and should be doing, because we exist as a service to our community, and so we should be welcoming.
I can tell you personally, though, in productions that I've either produced or have been a part of as an actor or director, when you have an all BIPOC night, it is so incredible. And I just want to, you know, do that shout out for every single theater, not just PCS, to have that experience. So it really is a wonderful experience. And you think you're making things safe, but you don't really realize that how it's not quite as safe until you have a night like that, you know, or several nights.
It's a change in experience. I think there's as a Black artist who makes work at the regional theater level, meaning that the theaters where I create most of my work, the audience is going to be predominantly white. But my work generally features predominantly Black artists and artists of color. And so there is a really tricky relationship between, am I making Black art for white eyes? And trying to really figure out how to be intentional in that, because it gets into this tricky, almost voyeuristic lane. And how do you make art? Like, for me, I know who my audience is, or like my intended audience is generally my mother. And so if I'm making my art to appeal to my mother or to my younger self or to my friends, the entry points are just going to be there naturally. Like there are going to be so many access points because of shared references, in the same way that like Arthur Miller has access points to certain demographics because of shared references, that no matter what, an artist is going to put themselves into their work, and people who share the references of that artist will see it or will feel it. And I guess knowing that for me as like a queer Black person from the Midwest, maybe my reference points aren't going to be the same as many of my white audience members. I don't know that for sure, but learning how to create access points in my work for anyone to come in while knowing who my target audience is, and trying to say like, this is who I'm building this play for, so that even in those moments when there are 10 people of color in a 200 seat house that's full, that the work is for everyone, but that those 10 people of color feel that lift that comes from a specificity. But it's really, really complicated to have conversations about it, because I think we're afraid of being wrong, and how to get to the place of, I was wrong and I learned from that, of how do we listen? How do we listen to what people are saying? And I think that's where we get into bring more people into the room, because more perspectives will deepen how you approach things.
And it's part of an ongoing conversation. It's never going to be over, right? So there's some events, though, before we run out of time, that's happening at PCS. Josie Seed's production, Renaissance, technically, is this Friday, September 4th at 7:30 p.m. online. And there's the monthly Community Voices Project, which I've been enjoying with a Black artist that I love. It was so great to see Wanda Walden's artwork online, to tell you the truth. I love her. I've known her for years. Are those that monthly event going to keep on going?
They're going to keep on going probably beginning in the end of September and throughout the rest of our season. So
yeah, well, people need to check those out at pcs.org. And so I guess, you know, we've run out of time, but it's been such a pleasure to talk with you. Totally.
What a joy, truly. It's so nice to finally meet you, even if it's over Zoom.
Well, we will get to meet each other in real life someday. We're living for that, right? We're living for that. Chip Miller, Associate Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage, really wonderful to talk with you. And till next time, that's all I'm going to say. Till next time, we're gonna do this in person, I'm sure. Check out pcs.org for exciting virtual performances, events, and workshops, which we didn't talk about, but there are workshops happening. So do that. That's it for Stage and Studio. Hear the show again at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio. Until next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going out with more music by Ben Vereen in Pippin, because I love that so much.
Amazing.
Join us, leave your field to flower. Join us, leave your cheese to sour. Join us, come and waste an hour. Perform, hearts to warm, kings and things.